Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to see you all here. This is another fantastic opportunity that we have to be together and to contemplate and cultivate the deeper truths of our existence, hopefully, and the challenges that we're facing on this planet right now, individually and collectively. So I want to send you all my love and appreciation and welcome you warmly to our third Thursday World Peace Diet Circle call, which is on Thursday, January 21st, 2021. That's a kind of a cosmic number. 121. So that was a special day, as every day is. And bless you all. I really appreciate all your efforts. As I mentioned, if you may have noticed on one of the emails I sent out, I do think we'll be joined at some point here toward the beginning by our friend and World Peace Diet colleague, Bob Stagnito from Arizona, Sedona area, talking about some of the underlying issues we have. And of course, this is an opportunity for all of us to join together as a community and to air any questions we may have, comments or concerns. So really feel free to do that. This is an opportunity to do that. If you have questions or comments or concerns, press *6 on your computer or on your phone. And we'll go ahead and get started. I think I'd like to just go ahead and start on admitting people as they join us here. So, gosh, it's been a tumultuous 2 weeks since our first Thursday call, and a tumultuous month since our last third Thursday call. And here we are. We're moving through the rapids of change on our planet today, and I think there's lots to be concerned about, of course, but we don't know the big picture. So I think the main thing, we just all do our best. You know, just do our best. Each one of us do our best to understand and to respond appropriately to the situation that we as we see it. So we'll be talking about that today, and let's see. I see a few little notes together. That's good. Yeah, you're welcome. You're all welcome. Welcome, everyone. All right, so I'm going to, just begin with a short meditation time, which is a kind of traditional to do on these calls. And unless there's anything pressing from anyone, Madeline and I are still in Florida. Just to let you know, we're in at Hippocrates Health Institute still, and it's wonderful. This is the fourth actual recording that we're making today. Madeline and I did a video this morning, actually this afternoon, earlier this afternoon, with Brian Clement and his wife Anna Maria Clement, a video recording for their TV station, and then an audio recording for their radio station that went out actually right here in West Palm Beach on the radio as well, promoting all the benefits of vegan living. And then we just got off of one for Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia. One of the World Peace Diet facilitators is a professor at Dalhousie University in Nova Scotia, and she's promoting veganism in the university and the community there. So we just did that. So it's been kind of a busy day. I'm talking a lot today. And, but it's great. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. All right. So let's go ahead and just, take a few minutes for our meditation. And this is something that I think is just a great opportunity wherever you are for just a few minutes to turn our attention within, however that's comfortable for you. So feel free if you'd like to, basically muting everybody's phone when you come in or your audio when you come in. You can leave your video on if you want, or you can turn it off if you're more comfortable doing that for the meditation. And we'll go ahead and get started. So let's, wherever you are, just take a moment and breathe this precious air filled with life force, filled with the vibrations of countless generations and the cells and molecules and atoms of countless beings, including, I'm sure, Jesus and Buddha and many more enlightened saints and sages, both men and women through the ages. They're molecules that were in their bodies or in our bodies. So it's always good to remember that we're interconnected with some very highly evolved, compassionate, awake and aware beings. And to feel our connection with this beautiful planet, let's just take a moment and give thanks for the earth, the abundant and caring earth, this earth that continuously sends vibration and life into billions of buds and sprouts and branches and leaves and trees and berries and bushes and fruits and into the birds and fishes and mammals and all the other insects and flying butterflies and beautiful little yellow and green frogs jumping around in the forest. And such an amazing symphony of life on this earth. Every being has a niche. Every being has a part to play. Every being has a purpose. Every being has an awareness and a consciousness. And if we perhaps explore our own inner wisdom, we can tune into the sanctity and beauty of this symphony of literally billions and trillions of voices all raised together and dependent and interdependent upon each other in ways both physical and metaphysical. And we know that beyond this earth are countless dimensions of awareness and reality, that we are interpenetrating with them, and that what we are essentially is eternal awareness and consciousness. We're manifesting through a physical being here, as are all the other countless beings. And yet we celebrate the fact that what we are is eternal, of the nature of heaven. So heaven and earth merge in us and dance together. May we raise up our planet to a more enlightened state, and may we bring the heavenly wisdom of compassion and eternal consciousness and radical inclusion into our earthly experience here as individuals, and be an inspiration for others on their unique path as we let go of any tendency to blame or criticize ourselves or others, and enter into a deeper communion with the source of all life that binds us all together. So we give thanks to all the other vegans in the world, and all the other caring people in the world, and all the other human beings, the whole human family here, and all the other living beings, all the animals celebrating their lives, the whole web of life. And we give thanks for this precious opportunity of a human birth. We just breathe into that, a human birth at this time of tremendous challenge and transformation. Some feel that this time we're in right now is perhaps the most powerful, important time to be alive in the last 3,000 or 4,000 years. Lots of changes are coming together. As the World Peace Diet discusses, we've got 10,000 years of animal agriculture coming to a head now as we see the culmination of this way of seeing and dominating and realizing that it is absolutely non-sustainable with the technology and the population that we have. So may we all be agents of awakening. May we all be agents of healing. May we all be agents of wisdom and love and understanding in all of our relationships with other human beings and with other beings. And may we now just connect with our dreams. Maybe take a moment and feel the dream that you have in your heart for your life, for our shared life. And just hold that dream as a vision or as a feeling or as a song or as a fragrance. However it is for you, that dream of the possibility that we have of opening a doorway into a greater unfoldment of beauty and consciousness. Just let that dream percolate into your thoughts and into your feelings, and now into every cell in your physical body. It's percolating through all of your organs, all your nerves and muscles and bones and fibers with inspiration and with a zealous enthusiasm to allow it to flow from every thought, word, and deed into the world that we share together. In your own unique way. And then just feeling our connection with each other across the miles. Wherever we are on this planet, it seems like we're so far away from each other. And it is far away if we had to reach each other, as my father used to say, crawling on our hands and knees, pushing a peanut with our nose. It's a pretty long way to go. But when we think of the earth as a small but beautiful jewel, we're all in the same jewel here. Points of light, very closely connected. And just feel this web of light that we are connected with each other, with all the other fellow activists and advocates, pioneers and explorers of consciousness and compassion and awareness on this earth, that we share in common a family tie of, in a sense, cosmic brotherhood and sisterhood that binds us together. So we give thanks for each other and for all of our loved ones and for this unique opportunity that we have at this time as we see a distillation happening on this earth, polarization, and the great challenges that we all face in keeping our wits about us and our hearts open. So, as we close our meditation time, let's just breathe together, connecting with the four Viharas, our true home, breathing and radiating love, connecting with love in our heart and allowing the love that is our true nature to radiate into every cell of our being, and allowing that love now with every exhalation to radiate out into our world. And let's connect with compassion. Let the compassion in our hearts rise and just pour into every cell of our being, and radiating into every cell of our being and out into cosmos as we exhale. Connecting now with joy. With every inhalation, we invoke the joy that is our true nature. Sending it into every cell of our being, and as we exhale, radiating joy into our world, filling the whole world with the truth of infinite joy. And finally, we connect with peace. Peace of our true nature. And with every inhalation, we allow this peace to permeate every cell of our being. And then, with every exhalation, allowing this peace and harmony to fill our world, and visualizing the entire planet now bathed in the light of peace. Great. So just abiding in our true home, abiding in love, compassion, joy, and peace. And seeing our world also bathed in the light, and the truth of infinite love, compassion, joy, and peace. And that love, compassion, joy, and peace are inspiring the actions of all human beings in our relationships with each other, with animals, and with ourselves. And so we close now, just giving thanks, knowing that each one of us is a radiating center of divine love, and that we're all awakening to our true nature, and that we're part of the awakening of human consciousness on this earth. Let's close by saying together our prayer that we say every day at noon for the Worldwide Prayer Circle for Animals. I think you all know it. It's very brief. Let's say it together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. One more time. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. And one last time whispering. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. So it is. All right. Thank you again for joining us. And here we are back again. So let's go ahead and does anyone have any pressing concerns? Because I noticed that our dear friend Bob Stagnito is with us, and I think it would be great to go ahead and dive into our time together and share some thoughts about some of the underlying dynamics of the situation that is unfolding in our world today. You know, a lot of you are aware of the basic teaching, which I keep emphasizing over and over again in writings and in talks we're giving, that we can never expect to have peace and harmony and freedom and justice in our human world if we insist on treating animals whose interests are to them as important to them as our interests are to us, with the opposite of that, inflicting pain and misery and suffering and despair and anxiety and slavery and stealing their purposes. So this is the great conundrum that we human beings have not seemed to figure out yet. We seem to still be lost in this delusion that we can have health and happiness for ourselves while we're eating the flesh and secretions of abused animals and enslaving them by the billions. So until we awaken out of that trance, I think we're going to find the challenges continuing to increase. And our dear friend Bob is someone who understands all this, I think, quite well, and was one of the people who, actually the person who initially connected us with these wonderful authors in England who are the author, who wrote a book questioning the whole Western mode of medicine. And so we want to talk about that. We would like to talk a little bit about the Western mode of medicine for a little while, because I think in many ways it's based on animal agriculture. And a lot of us as vegans question it. A lot of us as vegans don't question it. I personally, for myself, have found that it's helpful to question it. But it can be very unpopular to question it. It's very unpopular to question animal agriculture in our society. So I'm going to go ahead and Bob, it's great to see you. I'm going to go ahead and just ask you if you can unmute your phone, press star 6, or your computer there. Yeah. Okay, so welcome, Bob. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. My pleasure.
You're right. Mm-hmm. So, Bob, can you just tell us at the beginning a little bit about your background and some of the work you've done in the field of health and wellness, and so we get to know a little bit about your path, and it'd be just nice to hear a little bit about that.
Actually, it all started when I was 18. I had a lot of health issues. My family was very medically oriented, so went to the doctors often, had lots of different drugs that were given me for everything from migraines to digestive problems, etc. And a good friend of the family who was happened to be a chiropractor and also he practiced natural hygiene, introduced me into natural hygiene, gave me a whole bunch of books to read by Herbert Shelton, who was basically the person who put it on the map, so to speak, most recently. He's gone now, but anyway, some of you might have heard of Herbert Shelton. But anyway, so I started reading these books, and it was just so simple. It made so much sense. It was just like, you know, the idea of veganism. You know, it's very simple. And when you just comprehend the whole thing, all the pieces fit together. It makes sense. Something in your heart tells you, like, hey, this is it. And this is the way it's supposed to be. So anyway, I started making changes in my life. Stopped all the medications, changed my diet, got into a plant-based diet. And not all natural hygienists actually advocate the plant-based diet. The majority do, but some don't. And unfortunately. But anyway, but basically natural hygiene, the whole premise is that it's a self-healing organism. And if we just remove some of the things that are interfering with its functioning and give it what it needs, basically that's it. Take away the things it doesn't need that are interfering with its functioning and give it the things it needs. And that's not just in terms of diet, but in terms of, you know, sunshine, fresh air, exercise, positive mental attitude. It's a whole, complete structure of things. Then your body's going to slowly start to regenerate and function the way it should, you know, within limits, of course, just depends on how much damage it's done. But so I started doing that, and of course I was a rebel without a cause back then. When I was 18, that was 1968, and that was the height of the whole hippie thing, and so it was fun, you know, as well as it was a very positive experience for me, because all my symptoms went away, and I became a crusader for natural hygiene. And then I thought, what am I going to do with this? You know, I needed a career. So I went on to study naturopathy. It started, I guess it was when I was 20, and finished with a degree in naturopathy in 1973. But at that point, no one even had really heard about naturopathy. I think only two states were licensing naturopaths at the time, and the state I was in was not one of them. So I thought, what am I going to do with this? And then I thought, well, I'll go to chiropractic school. So I did go to chiropractic school for, I think it was a year and a half, 2 years, and just got very disappointed with it because it was very limited and didn't encompass all the things that I thought were important to help. So I took a leave of absence, and then afterwards I went to Spain with a group of people who were putting together a school where they were teaching what they call spinology, which was basically kind of a form of chiropractic, but they were also incorporating natural hygiene, you know, other aspects of health that wasn't just about the spine, which I thought was really good. So I spent about 8 years in Spain teaching at that school, and then came back to the States, was a little homesick, and there was nothing I could do at that point except try to get licensed as a naturopath. And at that point, there had been so many changes in the profession that I would have to go back to school to take other courses because, as you know, they keep upping the ante with all these things to protect the turf or whatever, but you know how it is with professions. So I decided, well, I'm going to explore Chinese medicine, and I started studying Chinese medicine, which took me to China. I spent a whole calendar year there in an intensive crash course. And it was a course for people who had a background, a medical background, and basically became an acupuncturist. And that's what I'm doing today. Of course, the focus is basically still teaching people natural hygiene, changing their diets, and everything that's related to health. But they come to the door usually with some kind of ache or pain or something like that, and they want me to help them get rid of it. And I teach them that I can't help you get rid of it. You know, I can allay the pain, and without toxicity, without drugs. So that's the plus there. But at the same time, if they really want to have health, they have to make positive changes in their life. And the thing I stress the most is the plant-based diet.
Wow. What a great story. I love that. And that is such a beautiful story. So you really went from your own health crisis, and that propelled you to question the mainstream medical establishment, and you had success with Herbert Shelton's work. He's pretty well known. I think most of you probably have heard of Herbert Shelton. He was one of the pioneers, I believe, in fasting, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. He was really into fasting, into raw, I think quite a bit raw foods and natural, getting back to nature, and connecting with the sun, he was a pretty radical guy. I think I read one of his books way back, like you say, in the hippie days. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I was influenced by it back when I was in my early 20s too. Mm-hmm. So, but then you were actually acted on that and went to Spain for 8 years and did all this other study, and you've been helping people with Chinese medicine now.
Mm-hmm.
And, so you're deeply, knowledgeable through your clinical work, I would say, with working with people on a daily basis about what works and what doesn't work, and without using drugs so much. So one of the things I think that we're seeing happening in our society today that to me is very troubling and something that we need to be aware of, I think, is the great fear mongering that's happening about each other. You know, like you have to be afraid of each other, stay away from each other, wear a mask, stay away, be careful, there's these dangerous viruses and other, who knows what, germs everywhere. And so the idea is that we have to lock down our businesses and keep everybody home, because it's a dangerous world out there. So from your point of view, all of these, 50 years of working to help people heal, what do you think about all that, that orientation?
Well, there's a lot of evidence now that what they call viruses are basically just dead fragments of former cells. This is not my idea. This goes way back. There have been a lot of doctors who have talked about that, you know, 50 years ago even. So they didn't actually even know what a virus was until they had the electron microscope. And that was, I believe that was maybe 50 years ago. I'm not sure, but the actual date when they actually, you know, invented that. But, you know, all the idea that this particle they call a virus is actually attacking a cell and multiplying inside of it, these are all just theories. You know, they've never actually observed a virus entering a cell and then replicating inside of it. These are all theories, because all they can see with the electron microscope, see, the particle is so small, you can only see it with an electron microscope. And to actually have a particle observed in an electron microscope, it has to be totally dried. It has to be chemically treated. There's so much that has to be done with it. And it's never just one particle. It's usually supernatant. It's a combination of things that they filter out and they centrifuge, and they assume they have the virus in this mixture. And so they put it in a cell culture with kidney cells of a monkey or whatever. But they also add to that mixture antibiotics, other chemicals, stabilizers, and the cell dies, of course, and they blame it on the virus that's supposed to be in this mixture. But the bottom line is they never observed the actual action of this virus attacking and multiplying. So it's just an assumed thing, because what happens is after they introduce this mixture into the cell culture, and the cell dies, and then they take it and put it under the electron microscope, they see all these particles dispersing from the, you know, from the cell. Not actually dispersing, because again, it's a still image. It's not a video. So they assume that it's little pieces. These little pieces are viruses, and that they assume that it was attacked, multiplied inside, and now you have all these little fragments. But they don't realize that that happens every day in our body. Cells die every day, and when they die, they break down into little fragments. It's the lysosomes within the cells that actually break the cell down into these little tiny fragments. So it's nothing unusual, but, you know, again, it's all how you want to view it. And that's, I mean, they have a vested interest, I believe, in viewing it that way, and that's how they convey the message. But actually, there is no proof, either in the laboratory or even out of the laboratory. You know, a lot of the experiments that Pasteur did in the early days, where he would inoculate an animal with the supposed bacteria, and the animal would get sick. Well, they weren't purified bacteria that he was introducing into these animals. They were mixtures of many different things. And supposedly in his notebook, which was released after his death, he admitted that he couldn't make an animal sick with just the pure bacteria, that he had to add other substances in there, other toxins, to actually produce an illness within the animal. So, and to this day, they have not taken an isolated, what they call an isolated purified viral particle, and introduced it in a natural way into an organism, whether an animal or a person, and caused the illness. They haven't done it. People don't realize that, but it hasn't been done. In fact, even with the Spanish flu back in 1918, they did some experiments in the States, and where they would actually take people that were full-blown infected with Spanish flu, and they had some inmates at the prisons who volunteered for, you know, early parole, and they had these prisoners come, and they would do everything they could to try to infect these guys. They would breathe in their face, sneeze in their face, cough in their face. They would put saliva from one person into their mouth. They would take their nasal secretions, put it in the nose of the recipient. I mean, they did everything possible to try to simulate a natural way of communicating this pathogen from one person to the other, and they couldn't make these people sick. So it's like, it's a lot of theory, and it's a theory that dies hard because it's like a superstition or a myth that, you know, the world is bought, and it's been well fueled by the medical pharmaceutical industry who wants to keep this thing going. But again, neither in the laboratory nor in real life have they actually proven that these isolated bacteria or viral particles, in case of viruses, can actually cause an illness. Now you say, well, but how about bacterial diseases? Well, you know, in any disease, they'll find bacteria, just like you'll find firemen at a fire, but they don't understand the purpose of it. The bacteria there as the cleanup crew to help clean up the toxins, break down the debris. So wherever there's tissue that's breaking down, you're going to see bacteria, but not because they caused it, because they're there to help clean up the mess. And there's another bacteriologist, virologist, that was a contemporary Pasteur, his name was Bichon. And that was his theory. His theory was it's the terrain, that the bacteria are there because they're there to clean up the mess. They're not the cause of it, but they're the effect. So there's a lot of, you know, opposing information that really never gets released. You don't get all this information in the regular, they don't get it in a regular medical school education. And, you know, it's just not out there. You have to research to find it. And now there are more people doing the research and putting that information forward. And there's actual MDs now that have come to this realization. Dr. Thomas Cohen, Dr. Andrew Kaufman, is a virologist in Germany, Stefan Lanka, and he's actually left the profession of virology because he says the whole thing is totally a sham. And he's exposing a lot of the truth now. So it's not like there's just, you know, alternative practitioners who are putting this out. These are mainstream medical people who were in the profession, had an awakening, and now they left the profession and are speaking out. So, the information is getting out there, fortunately.
So, thank you. That's a very interesting summary of some of the history of all of this. And maybe you could just say a few words more about terrain theory because I think it's kind of interesting. As I understand it, the germ theory is more of a victim mentality, right? Here I am, an innocent victim, and all mm-hmm. this dang germ came along, and it just made me sick. That dang germ. But I'm the innocent victim, and the germ is just one of those bad things that's out there lurking in the dark corners of the universe that's just ready to jump and attack at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got to have my gun to shoot him. I have to have my doctor with his needle or whatever it is, or the drug. And terrain theory, as I understand it, is more taking responsibility for the quality of the terrain, right, which is basically the physical body, and saying that whatever happens is actually not so much from a from an outside attacking force, but mm-hmm. is actually an arising because of the interplay between the terrain, the body, and the environment. Am I about on track on that? And can you
yeah.
say a little bit more about terrain?
Yeah, basically, you said it all very well. It's, you know, if you keep the inside clean and healthy and vital, then everything's, the homeostasis of the body stays, you know, balanced, and you have health. If anything, there are many things that can influence the body in a negative way. You know, and of course the medical profession says it's bacteria and viruses, and but as I said, those have not been proven to actually cause any negative effects. But there are a lot of other things that can. Of course, for one thing, eating improperly, you know, an animal-based diet can cause a lot of issues. Now, you know, that evidence is out there with a lot of statistics. Doctor, I believe it's Michael Greger. You've heard of him.
Sure.
He wrote the book, How Not to Die. And he has all the evidence of, you know, a plant-based diet versus an animal-based diet and how that plays out in terms of disease. I mean, there's an overwhelming evidence. So there's the factor that changes the terrain to the point where you'll have disease. You know, radio waves now, they're finding 5G, you know, and probably more than just 5G, but radio waves in general have an effect on the body because we are electromagnetic beings. So as we interact with those fields, you know, there's going to be some kind of consequence. You know, whether we can feel it or whether it's immediate or not, there's a consequence. And there's toxicity in the air, all the pollutants in the air. All the pollutants in the water, in our food supply. And then you can take it even to the next step and say, well, you know, even thoughts, even people around you that are negative. You know, we have an aura around us and we project these energies. It's like radio waves. And so if you're around a negative person, just being in their aura sometimes can actually be a drain on your body and cause an imbalance. So there are many factors. In fact, speaking of the electromagnetic body, even they find now even sun, you know, solar flares, you know, which, you know, changes the electromagnetic fields on the body, that can affect the body. And there are people that are tying this all together. There's a guy, I forget the name of the book, The Invisible Rainbow, I think is the name of the book. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Yeah, but on the whole spectrum of EMF and electromagnetic.
Yes. But he even ties in solar flares. He said that when you know, the sun has its solar flares, that affects the planet. And he ties it together with a lot of, quote, pandemics or epidemics in history, how that has changed things. And, of course, climatic changes. You know, any sudden change in temperature can affect the body. There's so many things that can affect the body. And to say it's a bacteria or virus, because, I mean, it's a funny thing that people will say, well, if the bacteria or virus didn't cause it, then what did? Is it that's it? You know what I mean? There's so many things. Disease is not just caused by one thing. You know, typically it's caused by a combination of things over a period of time. So to try to look for one thing and say, did this cause it or that cause it? No. You know, it's a combination of things. But unfortunately, bacteria and viruses have not been proven to be any of those causes or one of those causes. And that's really, you know, mind-boggling for most people because we've been taught since we were children. Oh, you know, don't sneeze or cover your mouth. You're going to pass the germs. It's really deeply ingrained in us. And so it's a hard one to overcome. It really is. Well, just like the meat thing, you know, most people think you need animal products to be healthy. And of course, that's still being touted today by a lot of people. The people in the...
A lot of doctors, right.
Yeah, a lot of doctors and non-doctors with their, you know, all these diets, the low-carb diet and you know, it's, the lie just keeps going on and on. And of course, you know, they say it's being funded by the animal industry, which it probably is, you know. just like the lie for the viruses and the bacteria being funded by the medical pharmaceutical industry, because that's their basis. I mean, for the most part, when you go to a doctor, it's mostly, you know, looking for the bacteria or the virus or the genes, the genetics. And if that is not it, they have no answer. They say, well, it's an autoimmune disease. We don't know what caused it, or, you know, they throw their hands up in the air. You know, they don't want to look any further, you know.
As Judy Carmen points out, it really has to do with the election cycle. You know, whenever there's an election coming up, there's always going to be a pandemic.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's the main reason you can tell nowadays.
Uh-huh.
The disease is going to be because there must be an election coming up. Wow, that's a really interesting, very well articulated, though, this idea that we really don't know that what actually causes so-called disease. Well, let me just play so-called devil's advocate for a moment. What about, because I think most people will say, wait a minute, I mean, for goodness sakes, look, we know that, you know, water can have germs in it. You can make, you know, people get Montezuma's revenge, and they get, you know, they get this and that. You know, they go to India and get sick. I mean, you know, there's all these things there, you know. What would you say about those kinds of things?
Well, for example, you know, food breaks down, especially if it's old and it's not maintained properly. And as the plant cells break down, there are some toxins that are eliminated, or produced, I should say. And so there will be bacteria there, of course, breaking down the dead cells in the plants, just as there are in our bodies. But again, you know, they have not isolated the bacteria from those mixtures and then put it into an organism and cause the disease. Now, the toxins that they're feeding on, they can cause reactions in the body. So if you eat some bad food, someone ate a piece of bad rotting meat or even a bad rotting, you know, vegetable maybe, you know, there may be some toxic compounds that are produced by the decomposition that can cause, you know, symptoms when you eat it. But the bacteria themselves that are present are not the cause, because again, what they've done, and Dr. Cohen explains this very well, they've taken the bacteria in those situations and isolated it and then put that into an organism without all the other debris, and the symptoms don't resolve.
Wow. That's great. Well, thank you. That's very interesting. So I'm wondering, if anyone has a question or comment for Bob, please press star 6 and unmute yourself or raise your hand or do something. I have a few comments, but I'd like to open it up to all you folks. It looks like Ann has got a question. So, Ann, please go right ahead.
Curious about antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Why does it seem like they work sometimes?
Okay, that's a good question.
It's my dog's ear infection recently.
Mm-hmm.
It's had a course of antibiotics and the stuff to put on her skin, and it seems like it works. So what happened there?
Yeah, again, that's kind of an illusion, but when you understand what these, quote, infections are, well, let's go back to like a flu or something like that, where people are spewing out, you know, toxins, you know, they have maybe diarrhea, upset stomach, you know, fever. They might have some mucus coming out of their body. These are all symptoms of a body that's throwing off toxins. Now, if you put enough poison in the body, what will happen is you'll shut that down because of the fact that now the body has to deal with the new incoming poison, and it just goes into a complete reversal of what it was doing. So while it was engaged in a detox process and that was being accelerated, as soon as you overwhelm it by putting those massive doses of antibiotics in, which are poisons, now the body has to deal with that, and it actually kind of shuts the whole process down. How it actually does it, we don't know, but we know it's interfering with the body's own process. So it can suppress the symptoms, just like an aspirin or an Advil might get rid of the headache. That doesn't mean it's getting rid of the cause of the headache. It's just, you know, hiding the symptoms, so to speak, by affecting the nervous system. So a lot of drugs can change symptoms, but changing the symptoms doesn't mean it's making you any healthier. And not only that, but you may temporarily get rid of that symptom by taking that antibiotic, but that doesn't mean later on that toxin has to come out and will come out another way. And it may actually develop into a more serious problem, like cancer or something else. So we trade one, you know, symptom, which is really not a bad symptom, for later on another symptom that's actually not a good symptom. It's the body being, you know, overwhelmed to the point where it can't help itself, you know.
Thank you so much, Anne, for that great question. And Bob, I think that's really profound, because what that does, in a way, is they make money on the antibiotics, drive the disease deeper, and they're just like putting money in the bank, you know, and it's just going to gather interest, and then a few years later, since the underlying toxicity never could get resolved, they're going to strike it rich with the breast cancer, prostate cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, or something else. And now we've got a real problem. This is going to cost we're going to make at least $100,000 on this one. We wouldn't want to cure it. We wouldn't want to have that cleansing happen earlier. We would lose, we wouldn't make any money on these people.
Yeah, it's interesting. People, we've been taught not to suffer, not to hurt.
Right,
So it's like, no. I mean, if I get a flu, so to speak, and I hadn't had one in years and years, but when I did get them, it's like I understood at that point, because I was still detoxing a lot of the medications and everything that I had been taking. But I knew what it was, and I just allowed it to take its course. The best thing you can do in that situation is to fast. Fasting is one of those powerful things. Because now you're not giving your body things to process, and you're just allowing it to process what it needs to from within and get rid of it. So it changes the whole flow in the body. In fact, Dr. Tilden, Dr. Kroll, these are early hygienists. They were treating people with all kinds of diseases that were deadly in those days and getting like almost 100% success by just fasting them. That's all they did, was fast them. And this was the same time when the medical profession at the time was giving them high doses of mercury and all these other sulfur and all these toxic drugs and killing people. And yet, with them, they were saving people just by fasting them. In fact, that was the main thing, as you were saying, with Sheldon. He had a fasting center in Texas, in San Antonio. And that's basically all he did, was fast them and then refeed them properly after the fast. And people came from all over the world with all kinds of illnesses. Everything from infectious diseases, quote unquote, to chronic diseases, and he had a very high success rate by just fasting people.
Wow!
And of course, sunshine, fresh air. He had beautiful gardens where people would rest while they're fasting. The body, there's an expression: the body needs no help; it just needs no interference.
You're just so articulate about this. I really love it. We've had the tremendous experience of staying here at Hippocrates Health Institute now for over a month. We've been here. And this is, an extension of Herbert Shelton's work in many ways. It's a beautiful 60-acre paradise where people come usually for 3 weeks, and it's like yesterday, Wednesday, is fasting day. But the only foods that are served are organic sprouts or raw organic vegetables. Occasionally a tiny bit of beans, but generally it's just a raw sprout. Raw sprouts is mainly it. And, and just today when we were interviewed by Brian, and Anna Maria, who are the directors of this for the last 40 years, he was saying, how they've had over 400,000 people have come through here. And he said that, they're sick, and they come with completely uncurable diseases. Mm-hmm. About like 70% of the 140,000 of the 400,000 have come with some kind of cancer that they gave up on. Mm-hmm. And that how, over 70% of the people who come through are healed. it goes away. The cancer goes into remission. And they've seen, personally know tens of thousands of people who have just by changing their food, and it's a holistic, so it's also positive thinking, lots of exercise, fresh air, sun, beauty everywhere, just spectacular beauty. I'm telling you, this place is so beautiful, it's breathtaking. And cold plunges and hot water and, all kinds of, meditation, binaural beat kind of things, headphones and everything to get the body into harmony, the mind into harmony. Chinese systems are also used but it's really a holistic system, and to see the amazing success and to realize in this entire country, and really in a sense in the whole world, but just say the United States, of 330 million people, there's only one of these. Like one place You know, really. I mean, True North in Santa Rosa is similar. So, okay, two places. And wouldn't it be, we were talking just a little while ago on the way home, driving back from our interview, why aren't there 50 or 100 centers like this? Can you imagine the utter transformation of our society if there were 100 Hippocrates? Like, you could go in any state, there was two or three, where you could just go and interact with people who understand disease as a healing process and who encourage us to take responsibility for our health, to bring our, to eat organic, healthy, mainly living foods, and to cultivate positive thoughts and be creative and do art, music, therapy, and just cultivate positive relationships and so forth. I mean, just see the joy and the healing. We have dinner all the time with people who, you know, she had breast cancer, he had diabetes, whatever it was, and they just see it. Every day it's getting less and less and less. It's just going away. And, you know, why is it that they're attacking Hippocrates so you know, viciously, constantly? They're trying to put him out of business. And why don't people know about this? I mean, it seems on some level just criminal that we have such a ruthless, heartless system that dominates and exploits animals and makes so much misery, and then does the same thing to people. I mean, the people are forced into these horrible hospitals and pharmaceutical situations where they're just getting doused with toxins. And but is there any redeeming quality to the system? I guess there are redeeming qualities to the medical system, right? I mean, there's some good things, I guess, for... What do you say about the medical system as it's functioning right now from your perspective? I know you're sort of an alternative, but how do you see the whole thing?
Well, of course, if I were in a car accident or whatever, I wouldn't want to go to an acupuncturist. I'd want to go to a good surgeon. And they do have some good techniques, and there's a lot of positive aspects of modern medicine. But even sometimes you may need a certain drug, you know, to save you in the moment. It's when that drug becomes a daily prescription, mm-hmm. and evading or overlooking the underlying cause, that's when it becomes just not only useless but deadly. So so there's a place for them, but it'd be a much more limited place if we had those centers, like you said, if all our hospitals were pretty much had a wing and they were like Hippocrates. I think that wing would be the big wing, and the other wing for, you know, emergencies and special surgeries would be a very small part of the hospital.
Right, and if people were educated to eat properly and all of that, we would need any of these hospitals, really.
Absolutely. You know, the one thing I wanted to add was with this whole COVID thing, because that comes up a lot for us now. So, well, how about all these people that are getting sick and dying? Well, just to sum it up real quick, and we don't have much time, but anyway, is a lot of these people who are dying are being grossly mismanaged. I mean, these are people with the flu, which, again, is a detox, which can then go into pneumonia if it's not managed properly, and they get to the hospital, and they're filled with fear, for one thing, and it, I don't know anything about the nocebo effect, but... You know, you can turn a sniffle into a major, you know, disease, a major illness. If you've got to remind things, oh my God, I tested positive and now I have a cough. And people develop symptoms. It's been known throughout history, you know, that you can develop a pretty severe illness just by believing you've got something. So you take this immense fear that the media is inciting, and you take someone who has these symptoms and they go to the hospital, and then when they get to the hospital, they start bombarding them with these highly toxic antiviral drugs, antibiotics, corticosteroids. I mean, then in a lot of cases, they put them under intubation where they shove a tube down their throat and they have to sedate them for that. I mean, they're putting them through hell. These people, and a lot of them are already old with pre-existing illnesses, and it just pushes them over the edge. But when they die, they don't say, you know, it was all the medical mischief and it was the intubation or it was the pre-existing illness all coupled together, they say it was COVID. And that becomes a COVID statistic, you know? It's just not fair. It's not right. But that's what's going on.
And then I guess...
So it's half these people who've got the flu, which is normally this time of year because of all the things I said, seasonal changes, right after the holidays, after people have been abusing their bodies by eating a lot of things they shouldn't be, and drinking, there's usually a detox that takes place in addition to the, you know, the change of weather and all the other factors. And then, you know, now with this in their head that, oh my God, maybe I have COVID, that just amplifies everything. And like I said, then when they go to the hospital and start getting treated, it's like, their chances of leaving are pretty slim, especially like I say, if they're already elderly and have other pre-existing illnesses.
Right. We just went to the CDC's website today and looked at the incidence of flu this year. It's so funny because, like, if you look back in 2017, 2018, 2019, it's very high. Lots of flu. And you get into 2020, 2021, you know, this flu season, there's no flu. Nobody's getting the flu. They're just diagnosing everybody with COVID because that seems to be on the agenda.
Yeah.
Do you think, maybe just say a word, and I know we have to go here, but a word about the test for determining that someone does have COVID, because we're all getting tested now.
Yes.
And the case rates are just going through the roof. And right. Now they're saying that there's these terrible new strains. Madeline was just talking to a friend in Switzerland, mm-hmm. and they just shut down everything in Switzerland because of the African flu strain. And then there's the London, England strain, and these are much more deadly strains of the coronavirus, COVID. What do you make of all that, and how are these tested for, how are they discovered, and what's happening?
Just a very good video that Dr. Cohen puts out. He explains the PCR tests and what they're doing. But just to sum it up, they basically have not isolated what they call the coronavirus, and there's a number. It's not COVID-19 is the illness. But the actual virus has another name, and it just slips my mind right now, but it's a coronavirus variant. And but they have not actually isolated, purified, and characterized that virus. And they admit it. You know, in fact, Dr. Kaufman and Cohen have put in requests to the CDC and to other, you know, facilities to say, can you give us a characterization of this virus, and they admit that they don't have an isolated virus. They have bits and pieces of what they assume to be the virus, and they put it together with a computer model, and they say this is the virus, but they've never actually isolated the virus, even though there are a lot of papers out there that say they did. Well, when you analyze the paper, you realize that they didn't really do that. They're just using that word very loosely. But nevertheless, the PCR test is basically looking for snippets or pieces of DNA, which they assume are parts of that virus that they have not isolated. And the test itself is just an amplification process. It'll find these pieces, and you can dial it up to different cycles, and it just multiplies it to the point where it becomes, you know, more visible, so to speak. And so depending on where they set the dial, if they set it, for example, under 30 cycles, it could be mostly negative. If they set it over 40 cycles, then it's going to get mostly positive. But it's not locating a virus. It's locating snippets of RNA, DNA in your body that almost everybody has. So if you amplify it enough, you turn up the cycles, you can make almost everyone positive.
Right. You could. It's kind of like cancer, right? You know, our bodies have always, anybody has a few cancer cells
right.
in there, and our immune system routinely gets rid of them. But if you said, oh, we got a cancer, or we got this new contagious cancer, so everybody has to get tested, and they just really dial it in there, and they can find, yeah, he's got some cancer cells, so lock him up. You know, it sounds, to me, it's the same thing. I mean, we're creating a disease out of thin air, because coronavirus is the common cold, so we've all got residues of that, and I've done quite a bit of research on this myself, and Sherry Mullis, who's the inventor of the PCR test, which is the gold standard for testing for coronavirus, for COVID-19, he himself said over and over and over again, never use this test to diagnose anything. You can't. It's completely unreliable. It all depends on nothing, really. You're just finding things, and you're finding, I mean, things that are there that may have nothing to do with anything. And it's so interesting how he conveniently passed away right before this whole thing happened.
Yeah.
He was yelling about the fact that they were using his PCR test on HIV/AIDS, and he was saying you can't do that, and he was a real thorn in the side of the pharmaceutical industry, who was trying to sell this idea that this AIDS is caused by this virus and so forth. And so you're getting in the way of the prophet, I think, quite a bit. So this is, I think, all fascinating background to what's happening right now. And I really appreciate your kind of shedding some light on this. You've been talking now for over an hour. So I mean, we've been here quite a while. So I really appreciate your taking so much time. I think everybody seems to be fascinated, including myself. Does anyone else have any final questions? We don't usually have a guest on this long, but you've been, my point of view, you know, shedding a lot of light on the nitty-gritty of what, of how viruses and bacteria perhaps, what they are, and how we're not really getting perhaps the truth about this.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone have any final questions? You can press *6 and ask a question. Let's see. Can you talk about masks for a minute? You want to do that, Bob? She's asking.
Again, once you realize that the problem is not being caused by some airborne virus entering your body and causing disease, then the mask becomes a moot point. But nevertheless, even if for people who believe in this, the size of the pore size of the mask is so much larger than the virus size. And I think Dr. Cullen uses the example. It's like putting up a chain link fence to stop mosquitoes, and that's about the size of it. But on the other hand, while it won't protect you from a quote viral particle or others, it will actually impede the flow of oxygen into your body and carbon dioxide leaving your body. So it's not doing any benefit even for those who believe in the virus, and it's also doing harm at the same time.
Right, and yeah, that's what I've been feeling. You know, it's kind of like people wearing masks. There's four ways that our bodies detoxify. One is through urine, one is through feces, one is through the skin, and the fourth one is through the breathing. And breathing is probably the biggest one. I mean, we're constantly breathing out toxins of all kinds. From our blood to our lungs, we're exhaling them. I mean, to actually be re-inhaling all these toxins, and then of course people get sick. And then of course you have a PCR test that'll make people look like they tested positive. Somebody asked the question if vegans ever test positive for COVID. Of course they do. I mean, everybody tests positive for COVID because you turn the cycle, amplification cycle up to 35, everybody's going to test positive. You know, you've got something like 98% false positives happening. But that's good politically because it gives power to governors and other officials to lock down businesses to transfer wealth into the hands of a wealthy elite and take away our rights, right? Our whole vegan movement is being destroyed, because we don't have free speech anymore. We don't have freedom of assembly. We don't have even have freedom of religion. We can't gather and talk and have veg fest and communicate. And yeah, I've already been, just now, silenced on Facebook, for example. And, so we're getting censored. You know, we're just getting censored. And, I think this is all a side effect of the fear that's being continually amplified. And, it's like we're becoming the livestock that we're exploiting. We're becoming, we trick animals into dominate and exploit them. And you know, we fooled them, and we just sort of lorded over them because we have power and we're superior, and we're just going to use them because that's what we do. And if we do that, we're sowing the seeds of that, and pretty soon we're getting lorded over. We're being played for fools and idiots, and we're acting that way in many ways, and just diving in and saying, please take away my rights. And I think the most serious, number one most important right that's not in the Constitution is the right to bodily autonomy, right? I mean, basically health freedom of my informed consent. Mm-hmm. And masks and tracking and vaccines, I mean, those are, to me, super dangerous. That's what we do to livestock. I mean, livestock are, they have no rights, right? We vaccinate them over and over again. You don't go ask the cow, do you want to have another vaccine? No, we just do it because we're exploiting them. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with tracking them. They're all tracked. They're all, completely, their bodies have no bodily integrity or autonomy. So how is it possible that we human beings could be willing, actually, to so blithely just give up the right of bodily autonomy, to just allow who knows what to be injected into our system. We don't even know what's in a vaccine. The average person has no idea what's in an injection. I mean, when I've read the list of ingredients on injections, it's horrifying. I mean, they always have animal tissues, always. And then they have squalene. Do you know anything about that, Bob, what they have in them? I mean, they have things in them you wouldn't want to have in them.
Oh, yeah, mercury, aluminum, all kinds of things. I wanted to add, too, because the first thing people will say, well, didn't the polio vaccine, resolve polio, or the smallpox vaccine, all these... What people have to understand is all these diseases were on the decline before the vaccination program started. And actually, after the vaccination program started, for example, with polio, it started increasing again. But what they did was they changed the diagnosis and called it spinal meningitis. So, they play with statistics. But there's a very good book written by an MD called Dissolving Illusions, Suzanne Humphreys. And she describes the whole scam with vaccines and how they really didn't resolve diseases, the major diseases. So that's good reading.
Dissolving Illusions by Suzanne Humphreys?
Yes, she's an MD. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just writing that in the chat room. There's people who want to look. I hadn't heard of that, but I think it's really important, as vegans, and especially as vegan advocates, to get informed and to do the hard work to question the official narratives in our society that promote violence and disease toward all animals, not just non-human animals, but human animals like us, and that we don't become livestock ourselves, because if we do, we don't have a movement. If vegans are not aware of this, and we get injected with things that make us sick or take away our intelligence or our capacities or our energy, the whole movement is destroyed. So I think it's really important that we become savvy and not just buy into these official narratives that are propagated by what I call the military, industrial, meat, medical, pharmaceutical, media, banking complex. This complex that gets rich off of disease and doesn't, they don't make any money on me and Madeline, probably you either, Bob. So. try to, live a healthy life. And if you do have something, come to a place like Hippocrates where, or create that in your own place, a space of love and healing, based on healthy, whole, plant-based foods and positive thoughts and positive relationships and creating beauty, and question the toxicity, having toxins put into us. I never heard antibiotics referred to that way as toxins, just putting toxins into the body. I hadn't thought of that. Mm-hmm. But I think that's brilliant, quite honestly, because I've always done anything I could to not have any antibiotics put into my body. I haven't had any yet. They put into my body in like 50 years. That's probably why I'm healthy. But I think of all these people that are always just very blithe. Oh, yeah, I just got some antibiotics. Like, it's no big deal. And I think, gosh, how do we give ourselves, our bodies, into the hands of these people who don't have to have a clear understanding? They're not bad people, but maybe they've been completely miseducated. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? All right,
yes,
well...
Yes. I might add to that, too, that I'm in the same boat as you. I haven't had any antibiotics. I haven't actually had any, even visits to a doctor since I was 18. I haven't had any pharmaceuticals. I'm not on any prescriptions. I just turned 70 a month or two ago, and in October, time flies. Anyway, and I don't have any aches. I don't have any pains. I hike every day. I feel great. I feel like I have the same pant size I wore when I was in my 20s. So, and I like, so I'm not on any medications at all. So, I mean, it's not like people say it can't happen. Yeah, it can happen. But you've got to live it. And if you make the change midstream, in your later years of your life, it's going to take some time to clear out all those toxins and debris and, create regeneration in your body. But it's never too late. It's never too late at all.
Right.
C.C. Fry, who was the life science, he created the Life Science Institute. In fact, I had the pleasure of working with him for a while in Austin, Texas, many years ago. But he discovered it when he was 50. And he was, had a lot of illnesses, a lot of problems. And at 50 years old, he discovered this and made a complete change in his life and made a big difference. Gave him a lot more years, that's for sure.
Right. Yeah, we've seen that with our two mothers. Madeline's mother went vegan in her 70s. My mother also in her 70s. And they wouldn't have lived so long. Madeline's mother lived to be 97, you're almost 98. Mm-hmm. And my mother, I know she's a lot better off. She's still alive, but we're not sure how much longer here. But they're just their arthritis and their asthma and all these things that they both had. Mm-hmm. Once you get the dairy out and all that, you just, wow, you get so much healthier. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very important. Gosh, you know, this is a huge subject. I can see there are some more questions here. I wonder, let's see, what should we do? Are you okay to stay on a few more minutes, Bob, or?
Sure.
Huh? Yeah. All right, so one point I just want to make quickly, I'd like to hear what you think about this, because this is something I feel like it's my own kind of quirky theory, but you know, the idea of contagion, you know, this idea of being contagious, that somebody gives something to somebody, to me is a very interesting idea, and I think it's intuitively true. I think that we do pass things to each other. But for me, from my point of view, it's more an energetic thing. Like, you know, you walk into a room, you know, one person, if everybody's kind of down, one person walks in with, like, joy and happy, starts making jokes, and, like, the whole room is like, wow, it's like the contagion spreads, and people start feeling better, and, you know. And the same thing, you could have, you know, a room and one person that's really a bummer, you know, down and angry, whatever. They can break everybody down really fast. Like the whole room just suddenly collapses. The whole energy of everybody's like, ugh. You know? Mm-hmm. I've seen that happen. I mean, when I was at the farm in Tennessee, there's like 1,000 people lived there. And we used to talk about like one person who's having a really bad day can like ruin the vibe for the entire community. Mm-hmm. They tried taking in like prisoners and things. They said, we're so good, you know, we can take in some really heavy-duty, hardcore, you know, drug addicts, and we can make them, you know, we're so high-vibe, we'll just make it happen, you know. And they had to give up that policy because they found that some people, you know, it's like, whoa, just one or two people can, like, they were more than the whole community. They had to stop doing that. So there's some kind of thing with contagion, but there's also, I think, but that's not so much physical. I think it's more vibrational. I think it's sort of vibrational, and I feel like I see it all the time. And I know sometimes, like Madeline and I, will have something sort of like she'll have it, and then I'll have like maybe a little whatever, a little cleaning out kind of thing, and then I'll have it a little bit later. And you might say, "Oh yeah, she gave it. You know, she gave it to me. You know, like, oh she had it, now I had it. You know, that kind of a thing." Mm-hmm. But very often it doesn't happen. Like one will and one won't. But occasionally it is kind of like that. And for me, my natural tendency is I always people have heard me say this. I just embrace. I love it. I mean, it's like great, you know. Because like when I feel a strep throat coming a little bit, it usually doesn't last more than you know the most a day. But I feel like those if there's bacteria, like streptococcus bacteria. Like they're my friends. They're like going in and making this thing, you know. So because what happens, I start having some mucus, you know, it generates this, and that's like, I know there's toxins. There's like 80,000 toxins generated by chemical industries. They get into our body. You've got to get them out. So the streptococcus is not the enemy. It's my friends helping clean this thing out. Mm-hmm. And there's this rhythm. I think there's this rhythmic thing. It's like when one body is cleaning out and another body's nearby, it's like, oh, you're cleaning out? That looks like a good idea. I think I'll do that too. You know, so we're cleaning out together. You know, but if we both have this idea, oh my God, it's terrible, you know, I'm feeling bad, I got a sore throat, I got a runny nose, I'm going to get an Advil, I'm going to go to the doctor, we got to suppress this thing, and I can't see anybody, I don't want to give it to them, oh no, you know. Like, it's all based on a complete delusion.
Yes.
Complete misunderstanding of, like, this rampant victimhood. Like, we're separate from nature, nature's out to get us. There's all these invisible forces that we don't know what they are, but we have these high priests, these doctors, and have their microscopes, and they found them, and they can tell they're really bad. They've got guns on them, and they're trying to shoot us, and we've got to get our bigger guns, and we've got to attack them, and we're going to win the war against nature, and we're going to win the war against animals and against all these evil entities out there, and we're the superior ones, and we have our technology, and without our technology, we're finished. So everybody's begging to have an injection. They don't know what's in the injection. They just know they want it. Even if the injection's got these substances that actually change your DNA and RNA and could create massive disease down the road. And it gives it away. These drug companies have passed laws that they have no liability no matter what happens. You put it into the person, the person dies right away, no liability. So how is it possible that we can be so dense and so, I just like, how do they do it? How do they fool people? I remember The Who, you know, we're not going to get fooled again. It's like Charlie Brown and Lucy, you know, I mean, you can do it 1,000 times and he'll keep believing, yeah, oh, this must be the one. I mean, how is it possible? I can't even imagine. I mean, and yet I see us going down this road of losing our freedoms, and I'm hoping that people like you, Bob, and all of us who are having this understanding can somehow bring this out. But I found that there's this sort of, it's like water on a duck's back on a lot of people. It's like talking to people about giving up meat. They say, no. No, I'm not going to give up my medications. I'm not going to give up my meat. You know, they kind of go together. Mm-hmm. In such a kind of strange way. And to me, it's like we have to wake up out of this somehow.
Yeah, I would add to that the reason why it's hard for a lot of people is because they're addicted. And it's a lot easier to blame something else than to change your addictions. Blame a virus. Blame a bacteria. Instead of saying, no, I'm making bad choices in my life with everything from what I eat, what I do with my body, the people I associate with, the environment I'm in. You know, it's a lot easier to just blame it on a virus or a bacteria. The people don't want to take responsibility for the most part.
Well, that's it. I think, yeah, unfortunately, it goes back to our educational system where we talk to this trust authorities and get graded by them and do whatever they say. And you're right, this has been something that's been injected into us, really. The vaccine is just the final injection since we've been born. So, but veganism, from my point of view, is this awakening out of all delusion. Awakening out of all delusion. I mean, all of them, especially the ones that we're talking to ourselves all the time. That's the hardest one. I really appreciate, Bob. You're just a beacon of light. I feel like you're actually helping people. They're seeing you. You're helping them with energy medicine. And but I'm happy to hear any thoughts or questions anyone may have here in the final few minutes. I really appreciate, I've never had anybody on the entire time, but I mean, I can't help it. I don't want you to hang up. okay, let's see. Kenny's raising his, okay, go ahead. Something about
that? Yeah, I haven't heard of him, but of course, I've heard of Dr. Hammer in Germany. He's got the German New Medicine. And he speaks a lot about that, how the emotions can really tie into a lot, the actual cause of a lot of illnesses, and how releasing those emotions can help in the healing process, for sure. So,
is that H-A-M-M-E-R in Germany?
Pardon?
Is that H-A-M-M-E-R, Dr. Hammer?
Yeah, I believe that's it. A. Hammer.
In German, okay.
German medicine.
Right, okay. All right, we're just getting close to the end of time. Ken Rosler, did you want to ask anything?
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm really happy I'm here. I was unclear. What time do you start and what time do you end?
9:30. So it's just about 9:30.
Oh, West Coast time. I thought you started at...
Okay. Sorry, you're right. I'm in Florida. So 5 and we end at 6:30.
Oh, you started 5 to... Oh, 5 to 6:30 because I thought you started at 6.
Right.
And I'm sorry. So you'd be over in a little while. All right. Let me just say a few things, please. You're my number one teacher. I've told many people that. I've given out thousands of pamphlets for 6 or 7 animal rights groups and many of your CDs of World Peace Diet. I have to say, one of the spiritual teachings that I did for 7 years. I listened to what that last fellow spoke about that I did when I lived in the Pathwork community from 1975 to 1981.
We only have about a minute, Tim, so I mean, we really have to wrap it up. Sorry.
Okay, 30 seconds. Let me say something about, because all this anger and rage and sadness we keep inside. I mean, I got to see myself and hundreds of people, scream and yell with bioenergetic therapy, cornergetic therapy. And it's important Like, I wouldn't walk in the supermarket with a mask because I would probably have to fight someone to the death, but I believe what you're teaching, that we have to, you know, I want to be a spokesman, and it's not going to help if people are going to come kill me. I mean, if I got into a fight, you know, get into the anger, I would fight someone to be to the death, probably. So I don't want to die, but that's why I wear a mask when I go into the supermarket. But I take it off right away and try to wear it as little as possible.
Mm-hmm. Great, thanks. Thanks, Kenny. So here we are. We're basically, unfortunately, out of time. I don't know what time is, kind of like a time warp, it seemed like. But I think, you know, hopefully what we can do is just, again, come back to the deeper truth of the benevolence of life. Our basic connection with animals is can be one of benevolence, kindness, caring for each other, kindness and caring. And to do the best we can to take responsibility for the quality of our relationships, the quality of the food we're eating, the quality of the way that we are projecting our consciousness into the world, and be willing to question the tribal delusion. You know, I think one of the big things is when we're vegans, we're in this new tribe. You're not eating the same food as the other tribe. And now we see this new overlay of, are you in the tribe of wearing masks and taking vaccines? Or are you in the tribe that says, no, I'm going the path of natural hygiene. I guess that's one way of saying it, natural health, trusting myself and others. And I think there's a tendency, perhaps as part of the narrative, to think that if one doesn't wear a mask, I don't know if I should admit this, but I still have never worn a mask. And Madeline's the same way. You also? Yeah, wow. And so sometimes it is challenging to be the only one in the store and people. But of course, luckily we're in Florida, and Florida is really, oh man, it's so much better. It's really not that such a big deal here. But what I was going to say is just the capacity that we have to stand in a way of love and to just be willing to be judged, right? Maybe unjustly. As vegans, we're very often judged unjustly. I mean, I think, you know, like people think, oh, you don't eat meat, you think you're superior or whatever it is, or you don't wear a mask, you don't care about us. And really what we're doing comes from a much deeper caring. I really do care about animals, and I really do care about people, and I really do care about our constitutional freedoms. That's why I'm making a stand. I care about you, and I care about you. That's why I'm not wearing a mask. I care about you. That's why I'm not eating animal food, because I care about you and animals and everyone. And again, not to make any dualisms, and each one of us, of course, I just want to really encourage everyone to just come to your own conclusions about this, but I think the most important thing ultimately is that each one of us is on this earth for a relatively short time, and this incarnation goes by fast, and in a little while we'll be off the stage and we'll be looking back on this lifetime, we'll be thinking about how we lived our life and what we learned, what we didn't learn, and then we'll be on to the next life, right? And so this is just a school, and we're here for just a blink of an eye, really, in the big picture. And so to do while we're here, just do the best we can to make our incarnation a vehicle for healing, for love, for awareness, for the highest good of everyone. And that's really, I think that's the challenge. And in the heat of the battle, it's very tempting to just go along with everybody, just do what everybody tells us to do, and to actually be, in a way, perhaps a lone voice, but to always have it come out of love and not to see it as something we're doing in order to get revenge or to judge or criticize or blame anybody else. So ultimately, I think it goes back to the same great teachings of Jesus and the Buddha and all the great prophets that we're here to love and to learn to love and to not be afraid. Essentially, because what we are is the infinite sky of awareness, which is not afraid of any clouds. The clouds, they could maybe cover the whole sky, but the sky is far bigger than that. So I really feel like I should stop here. I don't want to intrude on people's time, but let's give a big hand to Bob. Bob, you've been wonderful just to share your wisdom and insight so beautifully. So thank you very much. And
thank you.
Thank you, Bob. And to my wonderful wife, Madeline, who's been here the whole time in the background and keeping things going and working so hard and together so beautifully. Mm-hmm. We're checking in and out with my mother, and like I say, she is, I have to say, tending down in the sense of, or leaving, no, it's not down, it's maybe up, tending up, but tending away from the earth. She's almost, in some ways, not even here anymore. My old friend, Joe Miller, who's a spiritual teacher in San Francisco, he used to say, well, if she's got one foot in the grave and the other foot on a banana peel. She's really, really close to going, but she still recognizes us and she still smiles, this big smile. In fact, she has no ego at all. Nothing bothers her. She's just there, just present, and it's quite beautiful to see.
Mm.
So, and she's had a beautiful life. I mean, she lived the last 30 years of her life in North Philly in a black neighborhood. Her car had bullet holes, and all she did was help people. I mean, she was fearless and just helped people, and they loved her. She lived, I mean, I can't even tell you what kind of life she had. She was amazing. So we all are going to go. We're all going to go there. And so the question is always how we make each day to wake up every morning and give thanks for another day.
Mm-hmm.
So much love to all of you. Thanks for joining us. We're going to continue on with next the third Thursday of February and the first Thursday of February. We'll do our satsang, so please join us for those. If you have any final thoughts or questions, feel free anytime to email me. Always happy to answer any specific questions you may have. April Wilson couldn't be here tonight. She wanted me to send her love to everybody. And I'm sure there's other people like that. But we do always have all these calls or all archives, so you can listen to them later. All right, so let's just close finally with our... I'm sorry I don't have the piano. Usually I can play a little music at the end, but I have to do that by imagining we're down here in Florida. But big thanks to everyone. Let's close with our prayer of compassion. We can say it together. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. One final time. Compassion
encircles the earth for all beings everywhere.
All right. Well, much love to you all, and hopefully this didn't shake you up too much, or maybe it did. I'm not sure, but we love you, appreciate you. We look forward to continuing our connection. We've got lots of. Make sure you check out the resources. I mean, I've been doing so many Zoom calls, and there's really a lot. You want to watch lots of recordings and listen to them. We've got lots of that. Lots of great information. There's a lot to learn, lots to be aware of. Let's try to keep a positive vision of the future together. And know that every day we can make a positive contribution. So sorry we didn't have time to hear from more people, but it was really a precious time. So thank you very much, everyone. Go forth. Multiply the message in your lives. Much love to you all. And thanks again for joining us. Thanks so much.